This is ICAST, the intelligent radio broadcast on NMB Live, where you'll get food for your brain and fun for your soul. Hot topics, special guests, your calls and emails, and who knows what else. So stop surfing and start listening. Here is your host, Norman Michael Burketta.
Good Sunday night, everyone, and welcome to the smartest show on Internet Radio, the intelligent radio broadcast. And if you stay up with us tonight, we guarantee that not only will your IQ go up a few notches, but you will learn things here tonight that can change your life if you have an open mind and a willingness to explore brave new worlds. This is truly radio from the other side this evening. My very special guest has written a book entitled Talking to Extraterrestrials, and it is truly an amazing book. It not only examines her past contact with extraterrestrial beings, but it describes her ongoing contact. And you heard me right. She is still in touch with these beings, and if you've read the book, you know that they are using her and others like her to get a message to the rest of us. Her name is Lizette Larkins, and she will join us live tonight from her home in Virginia. And we will tell you how to get a hold of her book. And if you have any questions or comments for Lizette, you can email them to icast@nmbproductions.com. That's I-C-A-S-T. Now, you will hear a phone number throughout the program. That phone number will not work this evening, so you can email all of your questions or comments to Lizette at icast@nmbproductions.com. And now would be a good time to get a pen and paper, as we will be giving you some information shortly, and I will introduce you to my guest, Lizette Larkins. So stay with us. We will be right back.
Hello to you from all of us. It's nice to know that we are not alone. And so to you, from all of us, we'd like to thank you each and every one.
We are truly not alone, and our guest tonight, Lizette Larkins, has written a book called Talking to Extraterrestrials, and what a phenomenal book it is. And let me just tell you before I introduce her to you that it takes, it really does take courage and guts to come forward and write a book like this, and it is my pleasure to introduce Lizette to all of you. Welcome to the program, Lizette.
Thank you so much. And what a wonderful song.
Yeah, isn't it?
I never heard that.
That is for an artist named Terry Draper. And Terry Draper actually was in a band called Klaatu a number of years ago.
Wow.
Does that ring a bell?
It doesn't, but I'm making a note of it because that song just sums it up.
Yeah.
We don't even have to do the show now.
No, good night, ladies and gentlemen.
That's just about said it all.
That's
good
right.
Night, you know?
Yeah, that's been a blast. Thanks for joining us.
yeah.
Lizette, I have to tell you, I have, as I mentioned this before, I got the book. Thank you very much. I've read it. I've dog-eared and highlighted the stuffing out of it.
Wow.
And one of the things before we get in, you know, to your story, because what I thought we'd do tonight is basically just let you go and tell your story from beginning to end the way you want to tell it in the context you wish to tell it in. And then we can go back and sort of touch on some points, if that's okay with you.
Sure. And keep in mind, don't hold yourself back. Just if you have a question, just butt right in.
Okay. Excellent. I love that, a license to interrupt.
Right.
That is so cool.
I'm one of six kids. We just kind of grew up doing that.
Oh, did you? Okay.
You had to, for survival.
Oh. I'm only one of two, so. One of two, and we have two, but they're getting back at us for all that. You know what they call children, a payback.
Right, exactly, yeah. Exactly.
One of the things that I noticed, Lizette, when I was reading this book is that there are so many pockets of wisdom everywhere, all throughout the book. And I read a lot of books, like I've you know, hundreds of books in terms of positive mental attitude books and success stories of other people and so on. And I find that there are the things that are said in this book that are being told to you are extremely similar to some of them, some of the things that I've read, some quotes in that, you know, that are, appear in mainstream literature.
Right.
And so there's obviously a connection here. And there's one quote I want to ask you about in particular. I'm going to save that for later, though.
Okay.
So what we'll do is we'll break probably around 10:30.
Okay.
But until then, I would like to just sort of give it up to you and just start from the beginning, and I'll interrupt if I interrupt you.
Okay, so a monologue. Here we go.
Yeah.
well, it was 1987, as it was, and I was at the time married. I had a 7-month-old baby, and I considered myself in some ways just to be a normal housewife. In other ways, not so normal, in that I really recognize now that I was truly at a crossroads in my life, in that I was unhappy. There was something that it didn't settle right with me, in that I was at that point in my life where I was saying, is this all there is? What doesn't feel right to me about this? I was also working at the time for a large aerospace company, living in Southern California, and I was just at that place in my life where I felt that there was more. I was also unhappy in my marriage. It just wasn't working out that well. And since I had a newborn child, I was particularly upset by that, because certainly when you have a child together, you feel that your life is just starting together. And in fact, it felt like my relationship wasn't working.
Right, right.
And so I was questioning everything about my life. And at the time, my then husband traveled a lot. And so on one of the typical business trips that he was on, I, as usual, put my young son to sleep, went to my own bedroom to settle in for the evening, and as I got into bed and got a book out and kind of settled back, I sensed that, and I had turned off the light, actually having finished for the evening, and I sensed a very low vibration or a very low hum in the room, and I thought, is that the refrigerator down the hall in the kitchen, you know, acting up? It was so subtle that I just kind of cocked my head a little bit and kind of thought, nah, it's just my imagination. And then it got louder. And then I actually could feel it. I felt it through my skin almost. I could feel this vibration. And as it became louder, I sat up in bed, and I realized that there was something happening, but I didn't know what. My next thought was, is this a police helicopter that's landed on my roof? Because I was living in Los Angeles, of course, that's right where I went, you know, crime. There's something happening in the neighborhood.
Right. Yeah.
I also heard this, and it was getting louder and louder, and that I just thought it sounded like a helicopter. And as it became louder, a bright light burst through the ceiling and literally enveloped me. So picture this funnel of light coming from the ceiling against this backdrop of a dark room. And I literally went to scream. I was absolutely terrified. And as I went to scream, nothing happened. I mean, there was no, as though the scream just stuck there in my throat. And I then couldn't move. I was enveloped by this light, and I immediately became what I perceived of as being paralyzed. I couldn't move. And my thoughts immediately went to my young child down the hall, and I wondered if he was okay. At that point, I didn't have any context for what was happening. In those days, and even still today, I never really was a reader of science fiction, or I never found it entertaining to watch scary movies, or I wasn't really into horror at all. And so I just didn't know what was happening. The first thought I did have was, is this what a poltergeist is? My house haunted.
Right.
Those were some of my very early thoughts. And my heart was beating very hard in my chest. I could feel it. And I began to pray in my thoughts, you know, please help me. What is this? And next thing I knew, I was falling asleep. I felt just terribly tired, and I could feel myself just falling asleep. And it did strike me that that was strange. Because certainly if you feel terror, you don't normally fall asleep.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
So anyway, that kind of scenario played itself over and over and over again with some variation, but pretty much the same thing for about 2 years. But I became progressively more frightened as the months went by. I didn't feel that I could share this with anybody, although I did eventually share it with somebody, but I'll get to that in a second. And I would attempt to broach the subject with my husband, but as many people can attest to, it just doesn't feel that safe, because I, like many people, have taken college psych classes which discuss some of the early onset symptoms of insanity, for instance, hearing things that nobody else is hearing, seeing things that nobody else seems to see. And these events always happened when I was alone in the room.
Uh-oh.
My son would always be with me in the apartment, but my husband would always be out of town. So there was never any witness. There was never anybody to share these experiences with, literally. And so the stress increased also because I didn't share this with anybody. There was no one with whom I felt I could discuss it. And so the situation was really compounded in many ways. Eventually, I did seek out somebody. I actually went to a professional intuitive or a psychic, and she told me, yes, I know exactly what this is. You are being haunted, really, by evil spirits, so to speak. I thought, well, all right, why not?
That's one explanation, I guess. Yeah.
And, you know, she suggested that I light some candles and take a few salt baths and to help rid myself of these negative spirits. And, you know, I was raised as a Catholic in the early days. And so we went to church and you lit candles. And so that didn't seem like something too strange to do. And so I lit a few candles, and then the situation progressed as my husband would then come home and see lit candles all around the house. And he started wondering what was up with me. Eventually, I did start reading books about the occult, trying to find out what was happening. And things between us worsened until eventually, after 2 years of this, it becoming more and more frequent and me becoming more and more frightened for my own safety, but also for my son's safety. And then, of course, exacerbated by my questioning of my own sanity, my husband and I finally decided that I should admit myself to a psychiatric hospital for a full evaluation.
Okay.
At which I did. I did that. And I was there for 3 weeks, and I had excellent health benefits, and it was one of those upscale nut houses, if you will, in which it was in Southern California. And I, at that point, really wanted to know if I was nuts. I wanted to know it. And I knew people who were on various kinds of medications, Prozac or what have you, and I thought, it's not the end of the world if I need to take a medication so that I can get on with my life.
Yeah.
and not be bombarded by these lights and sounds in the middle of the night. And so I was willing. I really had kind of hit a bottom, and I was willing to be evaluated. And so for 3 weeks, I was the model patient and went through classes, and I had a team of psychiatrists and I took tests, and they didn't really quite know what to make of me. There was no medication that was dispensed to me, and I, at that point, just figured that that eventually we would sort it all out together. While I was in the hospital, my husband decided that he had had enough, and he served me with divorce papers, and then I discovered that he had gone to court and received custody of our child, because after all, the mother was in a psychiatric hospital.
And this, while you were in there, this happened?
Right. So I was just devastated. I felt betrayed on every level at the time, and I realized that it was an important turning point for me, because I became resolved to get to the bottom of it, because I had no intention of losing custody of my child.
Yeah.
Well, interestingly, while I was in the hospital, one of the psychiatrists on my team came up to me, said, "I only have a few minutes to say this to you, but you need to get yourself out of here." I said, "What?" You know, and he basically said, "I've read your file, and what I understand this to be is opening to some kind of paranormal phenomena. You're not crazy, and you need to check out of here, because you'll never regain custody in here. And although you think you're being the model patient, you know, you need to check out." So I did.
And would have been an incredible risk for him, would it not?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
He risked professionally everything. And I see it now as just one of the most divine interventions ever in my life, because at that point, you know, he even said, "I've got about 15 seconds to say this to you. You don't even have time to ask me a question." And
wow.
I was just dumbfounded. And then he literally turned on his heel and walked off. And of course he said, I'll deny if anybody suggests that I've ever said this to you, I'll deny it. And I, of course, had no reason to confront him.
Yeah.
You know, he said, "Do get yourself some counseling when you get out of this hospital. You know, get yourself into some kind of support group. But this is not the place where you're going to find resolution or healing. Not in traditional medicine." And I went, okay, I get it. So I checked out, because after all, I had checked myself in.
Right.
And I then began the process of hiring an attorney, and as it turned out, my husband and I settled out of court, and I did regain full custody of my son about 4 months later.
Okay.
Well, then I was left with, okay, I'm out of the hospital. Now, I should mention that literally the night that I went into the hospital, the strange, mysterious experiences stopped in the hospital. So I was also feeling that, gee, perhaps it was stress-induced.
Yeah.
Perhaps I sensed that my marriage was falling apart, and this was just a symptom, a part of the symptomology of, I don't know, heading towards a breakdown or something, because I stopped overnight. So when I got out of the hospital and had regained my son, I went back into a regular kind of life, went back to work, got a great job again, and obviously got my own place to live. And I did get back into counseling. I found a wonderful therapist, not the same one, because he ended up moving to New York. And now I had some kind of a support system in place. And I started working through all the issues of divorce and all those kinds of things, and how to co-parent when you're divorced. And, you know, many of the mechanics of how to be, just how to do the thing called co-parenting when you're not living with your partner anymore.
Right.
And I still was a little bit nervous about asking or discussing what had happened, because, let's face it, this therapist was still part of that profession that believes that certain things mean certain things.
Yeah.
Well, after time, you know, some time did pass, and I finally felt comfortable, confident, after querying him as far as, well, you know, what do you think about paranormal phenomena, so to speak? And so I was slowly kind of finding out where he stood in relation to things that go bump in the night.
Right.
And eventually I did come around to discussing those experiences, although they, at that point, still hadn't started again. So for another 2 years, I remained event-free. Nothing happened. I was just working, you know, raising my child. And interestingly, then I started to be able to discuss the things that were happening years ago. And then what happened was I had reached a certain level of, for lack of a better word, recovery or emotional strength in which I started to be curious. I thought, well, then if I'm not insane, because now I've been fully evaluated, certainly in the psychiatric hospital, but now also by the psychotherapist, because he did explain to me that he was bound by his license to rule out or consider psychopathology. So he, after all, I was raising a child, and I still did want to know. So I was continued to be evaluated not only by him, but other members of his team. And I went through the whole thing again, but this time in a therapeutic setting and a long-term setting.
Okay.
So it was no longer in a hospital setting, but I was having weekly sessions, and then those individual sessions turned into group sessions. So I was really resigned to get myself mentally healthy if, in fact, I were not.
Yeah.
What I understood was that there was no psychopathology, that I was completely of sound mind. And then after I trusted that diagnosis and felt confident with it, I thought, well, then what was it?
Naturally, that would be the question.
Right.
What was it?
And as it turns out, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And interestingly, in my case, when I became ready to know more, literally that night or the next night, you know, it's like it happened so instantaneously. As soon as I was emotionally ready, and I literally put it out there that, you know what was that then? I want to know. It started up all over again.
Wow, just like that.
Just like that. And it did. But this time, you know, I had had now a lapse of 2 years, and I was in a different frame of mind. I was much healthier emotionally and certainly psychologically, and so I was ready for it. And as the experience just started up all over again, this time I had a support system in place, excuse me, and I no longer needed to question my sanity. So that issue was out of the mix.
Yeah.
That really made all the difference for me. And so it did. It started up all over again. And this time, because I understand now, because I was not in such a degree of trauma, of constant trauma, I began to know more, see more, and remember more. And eventually, during one of those experiences, I literally awoke in the middle of one of those sessions in which I was surrounded by the lights and the vibrations, and I then, rather than falling asleep, I sensed that my physical body was actually being moved. But I couldn't open my eyes, and then there was some passage of time, and then I actually opened my eyes, and I saw myself in the midst of these extraterrestrials, literally. I mean, I woke up on a craft, and I just couldn't believe it. It was all of a sudden, in a moment, I had an understanding that, you know, this is what's been happening. This is what many people call an abduction.
Yeah.
Although I have to say, I immediately recognized that I was not being kidnapped. That in fact, it was an extraordinary experience in that I felt absolute explosions of love for these beings before me. And that experience, as things started to change, was in 1992 at that point. And my experiences have pretty much evolved from there.
And the love that you talk about there, that was not something that you had to look for. It wasn't something you had to fight. It just was there, correct?
Yes, it's just as you could imagine it if you are beholding your child in front of you. You don't have to convince yourself of the love that you feel. You just feel it. Nobody has to tell you to feel it. No one hands you a script and suggests that you feel it. It didn't feel induced in any way. It just was. And in this one instance, when I woke up on this craft, many of the details, by the way, which I cannot recall, even under hypnosis, which is something else we could discuss later about traumatic forgetting.
Okay.
There are some, obviously, details that I remember, and I saw in front of me, I was being moved from one craft to another area through a portal-like opening, and I was literally floating through the air without any kind of support system. And that was the first thing I saw. I saw my body floating through the air, and I was like, what the heck? And I was being transferred by this group of extraterrestrials, or ETs as I call them, just because we're so familiar with that term through the Spielberg movies, and it seems like a friendly term, so I use it freely. And they began to communicate with me, and I noticed that their mouths didn't move, nor, do I believe, did mine. It was a conversation or a communication from their thoughts to mine. It didn't require any training or practice. It was as though I just stepped into another world, and I had full use of all of my higher faculties, including, by the way, my sense of connection to all that is. And it was glorious. It was very much like people describe when they have near-death experiences in which they meet beings of light or wise elder-type spirits, in which they just feel this extraordinary sense of connection. And it was very much the same for me.
Wow. Liz, that's a good place. We're gonna take a break right now. And can you remember where you are?
Okay, will do.
and we'll come back in just a moment. If you're just joining us, my guest is Lizette Larkins, and she has written a book called Talking to Extraterrestrials. It is a phenomenal book. We're going to listen to a song from Alan Parsons Project. I've picked out some Alan Parsons music for tonight. We're going to have a quick song, and so you can get up and stretch and get a drink or use the lavatory, as they say in England. And in the meantime, we will be right back with Lizette Larkins. Fascinating stuff. Do stay with us.
You are listening to ICAST, the intelligent radio broadcast on NMB Live. Don't just sit there. Get up and give us a call at area code 613-247-9573 or email us at icast@nmbproductions.com. We'll return to the program after this.
search has found me lost for a million years. Tries to linger as it fills my eyes till it disappears. Could it be that somebody else?
We return to ICAST, the intelligent radio broadcast on NMB Live. Don't just sit there. Get up and give Norm a piece of your mind at area code 613-247-9573. Or email us at ICAST@nmbproductions.com. Here's your host, Norman Michael Burketta.
Wow. Fascinating stuff tonight, folks. Absolutely fascinating. My guest is Lizette Larkins, author of the book Talking to Extraterrestrials. And Lizette, I wanted to tell you a story, and I forgot to tell it. Can I tell a real quick one?
Oh, please.
Okay. A number of years ago, I walked into a bookstore. This is shortly after my wife and I were married. And I was looking for a book. I didn't find it. It came out of the bookstore, but I had walked past a rack of books, all written by Whitley Strieber, called Communion.
Uh-huh.
You're familiar with that book?
Yes.
Okay, so for some reason, I had no intention of buying it, but before I realized what had happened, I was standing out in the hallway with a purchased copy in my hand.
Right.
Okay, and that experience has always kind of, because that was my introduction into this whole world.
Yes.
Of possibility. And I still, to this day, have no idea why I was it was suggested to me somehow that I should get this book. But the neat thing is, it was about 2 months ago, I guess, when I was driving around at night, and I was listening to Coast to Coast, and I came in about halfway through an interview with you.
Mm.
And the same thing happened. I don't know why. I just said, I have to send her an email. Now, I didn't know you from a hole in the ground.
Right.
I didn't even know if I could get in touch with you, but the thought was, I have to get in touch with her, and I have to speak with her, you know, in this way.
And I'd like to suggest that there is that, there's almost this phenomenology to it, in which my understanding is that there is a large soul group of us who not only have agreed from the highest seat of our soul, from the place of the soul, to have these contact with these beings, but also to interact with each other in this way as a support. So there, you know, there are no accidents, there are no coincidences, and in fact, contactees are finding each other just as we are finding and becoming in contact with our other family members who are these extraterrestrials. And I know that flies in the face of the more common abduction model, and that
yeah.
people who have these experiences, if they feel that they're positive, they've been brainwashed, or that they're actually abductions. But that's not my experience whatsoever. Although, admittedly, there's often trauma based on how we grow up in our society and the cultural ideas we have about such things. So there is a very sometimes difficult process by which we come to opening to this contact. But by the same token, the soul calls on us, I think, to hook up, if you will, with others who have had the same experiences, and also to help remind us of not only what we're capable, but also to help prepare each of us for contact of our own that perhaps hasn't happened yet, but that will probably happen.
Yeah. And I was wondering that all through your book. That question kept popping into my mind.
If you yourself would
yeah,
be open
yeah.
to contact?
Yeah, is by reading this book, am I preparing myself in some way that I did not know how to prepare previously?
Well, interestingly, not only would I agree that it's a very good indication that when the soul is stirred at some level, there's something going on. So not only individually are millions and millions of us waking up to who we are as universal participants in the cosmos, and that means we get to know our neighbors if we would like to, but also within our species, that's where we are evolving to. That's the direction to which we're headed as universal participants, in that we can have relationships with our family members and our neighbors who live not across the street, but in fact across the galaxy.
Yeah. Yeah, that is so cool, isn't it? I mean, it's something that we thought of, at least I did, when I was a kid.
Yes. And,
you know?
And there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
The downside is that we've been prepared in some ways, but that preparation has involved a huge amount of Hollywood, you know, like a barrage of media stereotypes. And so, on the one hand, our cultural mind says these experiences are not possible. Yet on the other, the UFO experts or people who do believe that they're possible, then the contactee has to struggle against the tide of the prevailing idea about that contact, that
yeah.
it's negative, that if there's fear, that's an indication that there's some victimizing going on, or that it's a kidnapping. And so what is the mind to do, which really explains a lot of why there's such what we call traumatic forgetting around those events and contacts, because the mind has to do something with it. If your culture, if your government, if your school, if your parents, your best friends, everybody in your family, and everybody that you love and respect says these experiences are impossible, or, on the other hand, if they are happening, you're being tortured or victimized, then we oftentimes simply forget it entirely. I don't know if you remember your history books, but Magellan, when he set sail with his crew way back when and landed at, what was it, Cape Horn, I think,
yeah.
The natives there literally could not see the ships out at sea. And this is in our history books, because they didn't have anything like that in their world to relate to. So they would look out to sea at the ships anchored there, and Magellan had even made these notes in his captain's log that the natives could not see the ships at all. And so there's this whole idea that we understand that there's something very powerful that happens to the mind when it's confronted with an event or circumstance that is not supposed to happen.
Yeah.
And sometimes what happens is one experiences severe conflict, and that conflict is often dealt with through just simply forgetting. And so some of us have these dreams. We have maybe fragments of memories that we don't understand, or just this sense of emerging interest and intrigue about the subject. And many times the soul is just calling one to either awaken to what has already occurred or to prepare for what is about to occur, if one so chooses.
Right, right. Okay, and I do have an experience I'd like to talk to you about, but not just yet.
Okay.
where did we leave off?
When I was on the, when I was with in the midst of the ET group.
Yes, yes.
The group, the ETs that I was in the midst of, had the classic, the gray skin, the large head, the inverted, you know, the inverted head with the large black eyes.
Yeah, yeah.
And like many people, you know, it took my breath away at seeing them in front of me, because although I felt this wonderful camaraderie, I noticed that I was terrified, but my heart was beating very hard. And the thought even crossed my mind, am I going to have a heart attack? Because I have some feelings about this, because this isn't supposed to be happening.
Yeah.
And so the rest of the evening, if you will, I have not retained the full memory of it. There's some bits and pieces that I still cannot quite remember, although I absolutely remember taking in every detail. And that's one of the more frustrating aspects of this phenomena. Even when we want to remember, or we think we want to remember, sometimes it's difficult, even through hypnosis, to glean every detail. And part of that is because the soul also has its own agenda with respect to, I understand that from what I'm, my goals and what my purpose is, I'm wanting to experience this very much from the standpoint of a human in the human life and living on Earth. And certain details would not serve me, because I would be living, you know, too much with one foot in each world.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I remember some, and more continues to open to me over time. But it's not a perfect memory. I just wanted to make that clear.
Okay, okay.
And so during this one experience, for instance, I was put on to a smaller craft, and I recall absolutely looking above me and below me and being absolutely awestruck, and yet later on could not remember for my life what I had seen when I was looking upon it. So there are gaps in my memory of this and gaps in my understanding. And I actually witnessed some things that I didn't understand but now have a better understanding of, including the very controversial aspect of seeing these fetuses or infants growing within these jars.
Right.
And
yeah.
This is the huge controversy and really gets people upset. But when we drop, at least for a moment, our assumptions about what is good and bad and right and wrong, there's actually an understanding and an explanation that that rings true for me and makes sense to me. And I only offer it as one other idea and suggestion. And you have to see if it feels right for you. But my understanding is that we're actually taking part in a really grand plan and a grand undertaking, and that certain of us humans have agreed to participate in what we might consider to be an adoption program, in which before birth many of us have chosen to participate with these ETs, just as before birth we participate and make decisions as to what family we will be born into and what parents we will have and so forth. So unless one has that understanding, or one takes on that worldview, it's very difficult to make this leap.
Right.
That's what
right.
I'm finding.
Yeah.
Because within the illusion of it's all an accident, there's no meaning to any of it, the idea of seeing these, what appear to be and what are, as my understanding, human fetuses in another realm, growing in another realm, seems very jarring. No pun intended.
Yeah. Yeah, I was just going to say that. Yeah, okay.
Within a different context, stepping outside of the illusion that it's all an accident, it's all horrible, that we can't be trusted, we can't trust each other, that it's all just random chaos on earth and in heaven. Within that illusion, you're right. I don't feel like I could make any sense of it. But I have a growing change in my perception. And so that's what I feel that I'm offering tonight, is just another way to consider something.
Yeah.
And so as I understand it, many of us have agreed to participate and have initiated an adoption program. And it's much like the same type that we have on our own planet, in which we designate those who have demonstrated their inability to care for their own offspring, and we have those offspring placed elsewhere, an environment that is better suited for the development of that child. Well, in fact, many of us had decided, and I'm giving the really simplistic version here, that should we observe the Earth and its participants and its and our species to progress in a certain way in which the planet would have certain effects on it, both environmentally, socially, and politically, that we would have decided at that point to kind of segue a certain percentage of our population and place them in with families elsewhere. And so it's not about having our children kidnapped, but it's very much about certain of us, from the standpoint of our soul, having helped create this entire paradigm in the first place with these other beings.
Okay.
So although we have forgotten that we have done so, just like we have forgotten, by the way, that our parents are our parents for a very divine reason, because we've chosen them for the reasons and the purposes of our own soul development, and, by the way, the main blueprint of our life, we've also made these arrangements. And so those of us who have agreed to participate in this program for our own reasons have, in fact, many times forgotten that we have made those arrangements and choices. But nonetheless, the plan is still being carried forward as we have agreed to do so. And many contactees are, of course, becoming witness to that program that's taking place, because we're seeing it. And so the young that I saw are actually being raised in this environment, and then when their gestation, if you will, is complete, they are adopted into otherworldly families, and they live out lives with loving, caring caregivers. And this is something that certain of us humans have decided to participate with. So this is one of the more difficult, at least from my own experience, this is one of the more difficult and jarring stories, I think, of my own ET contact, because people feel that it's just too outrageous. It just sounds too victimizing. That how would anybody that's considered to be loving raise an embryo or a developing fetus within an inanimate object? And yet, when we recognize that we have our own children on this planet who are growing up in very much in a live environment, say within a womb of a woman, and yet these women are on planet, are on locations all around our planet in which there's significant stressors in every way, from poverty to lack of health to pollution to imminent starvation and on, then we can just for a moment drop our assumptions of what is right and wrong and good and bad, and notice that there are many ways to do something. And the way that we are most familiar with does not necessarily mean that another way is bad or evil or even ineffective.
Mm-hmm.
And so really, contactees have an opportunity to open to all manner of events and lifestyles which are very different than our own. And interestingly, it's one of the things that we struggle with as a species on this planet right here. Culturally and historically, there are example after example of how we can't, you know, we call it wrong because an ethnic group on the other side of the planet does it so differently than we do. We can't relate to it. People look weird. They have weird diets. They have weird rituals. And we just can't find that acceptable to us. Well, it's no different here. There are species and beings off of this planet who do things differently. And when we allow ourselves to drop our judgments, we find that, in fact, that difference doesn't make it bad or evil. It, in fact, those practices suit that environment or the circumstances of that other realm.
Yeah, which makes perfect sense, actually. Yeah, and something that we wouldn't necessarily recognize either because we're not out there.
Unless we are.
Unless we are.
Right. So, any other questions on that one before I move on?
Well,
okay.
To go with, again, back to the idea where you choose your parents and you choose other things, I'm curious, to the best of your knowledge on this, is one of those choices as well what you want to do with your life?
Absolutely. But
yeah.
It's not about having absolute predestiny, my understanding is. It's about we set up and decide the overall blueprint, if you will, of what we want to work on, what areas of growth we'd like to call to ourselves and call upon ourselves. And so, interestingly, we often choose the very parents that might challenge us the most in order to set up or instigate certain attributes that we want to develop within ourselves. And this can get really controversial because all of a sudden, you know, we're suggesting, or I'm suggesting, that my understanding is that then if there's no random event, if there's no random experience, then am I suggesting that then the child who grows into a family of abuse knew beforehand that those parents would be abusive?
Right.
And my understanding is yes, but for the most divine reason. It's not about being at fault for being an experiencer of abuse. I want to make that clarification. It's not about suggesting that a child who becomes then a victim of abuse is at fault. It's not about that. It's about recognizing that the soul is all-knowing and places oneself for a myriad of reasons on a certain path, and that path is not accidental. So it's about recognizing that even when it seems that there can be no reason for things, certainly, if you talk to people who have experienced significant difficulties, whether it's 20 years of alcoholism or a road of abuse and addiction, that even then, somehow, the soul had called to itself some experience, and the person was further along on their own spiritual path as a result of it.
Yeah. What fascinates me is when you hear people, and I mean, I'm one of these people, so people that are, let's say, doing what they knew they were born to do, quote-unquote.
Right.
And I've often wondered as to why some people heed the call more than others. But going back to making that choice before you're born, it makes sense to me in a way that if one knew what one wanted to do with one's life, and they, you know, you always hear them say, "I knew I was born to be whatever," and that's because basically they chose that, so they're following their own path. They're more in tune, or they can remember a little bit more. Correct, something like that.
Yes, but yes, and to me and my experiences, boy, that's a gift to know at a young age what you want to do. Conversely, the soul who is challenged with seemingly having forgotten or seems to not be able to find satisfaction in one's present line of work or course of work, to say, you know, how do I get in touch with my life's bliss? how do I find what my calling is? And this, to me, is one of the, at least it has been, it had been for my life, is to actually hear the voice of the soul. And that, depending on the, you know, each person's, what each person is working on, and I understand for me, one of the things that I have worked on in this life was to not only hear the voice of my soul, but to heed and learn to be able to trust that voice. And so I put myself into a family which was, I would say, challenged by ideas of paranormal concepts. So I didn't grow up with any background to prepare me for this kind of experience at all. I grew up, I feel, in a relatively conservative family in some ways, although they were liberal in others. But the point was that I was constantly challenged by personal issues of confidence.
Okay.
And so I would even say that I tended, if anything, to get into abusive relationships, relationships where I felt that I was bullied. I don't care if it was professional or personal. The point was that for me, it was something that I was working on. And so early on in my life, I set the stage by choosing very strong personalities, very opinionated people to be around, including my parents. And so it wasn't a random accident. In fact, I was learning how to find my voice. The ultimate challenge for me now is to find a voice about something that is so outrageously controversial, on the one hand, and then even within the UFO community, to speak about some of the ideas that I'm speaking about and suggest that, in fact, it's been a spiritual path rather than a victimizing abduction. So it's all been perfect. It's about, for me, finding that voice and learning how to hear the agenda of my soul. And I now recognize that is one of the crucial elements to experience joy and happiness, which is to allow the cultural noise to be silent enough so that you, and to create a way to do so, so that you can hear the agenda of your soul, because that's what starts the ball rolling.
Wow. We're going to take another break, Lizette. So, you remember where you are.
Okay.
I don't have to tell you that, but anyway, I'm going to put you in the green room for a second.
Okay.
And, when we come back, more with Lizette Larkins. I should mention, and I will verify this, but you can get Lizette's book, Talking to Extraterrestrials, by going to her website, which is www.talkingtoets.com. It's all one word. And not only can you get the book there, you can also, there are sample chapters there. You can sign up for a newsletter so that you can receive up-to-date information. And we have got one more hour to go, and I'm looking forward to it. So stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Intelligent Radio Broadcast. Just a reminder, the phone number, please disregard it. If you have questions or comments for Lizette, just email them to icast@nmbproductions.com. Stay with us.
You are listening to iCast, the Intelligent Radio Broadcast on NMB Live. Don't just sit there. Get up and give us a call at area code 613-247-9573 or email us at icast@nmbproductions.com. We'll return to the program after this.